listen to the Jason Greger Show presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Remember, if you gamble, use your game sense. Stay within your limits. Go to gamesense.ab.ca. Wyatt Rose, you're a big tequila guy. What do you think?
I wish I would have known about this yesterday when I dropped it like $150 over at Sherbrooke, you know, restocking my inventory for the racetrack. This is delicious. I love it.
Yeah, it is really good. It's, so the Wyatt, and Colin's very much a tequila guy. So
very much.
If it passes Livingston's tequila gauge, then that's when you know it's good.
Olé.
Olé. Now, let's start with some big news in IndyCar on and off the track. You know, Alex Palou, like it's, you know, but hey, he's just having a great season. I don't want to downplay anything like that, but like the season's over as far as who's going to win. We know he's going to win. It's just going to matter of, you know, how many races could he win. What's the record for most wins in a season in IndyCar? Is it 10?
Off the top of my head, I can't answer.
Okay. I got to look that up. I'm curious.
I'm not a good stats guy, and I have a terrible memory. But yeah, the run.
It is 10, AJ Foyt.
Those are all, yes, for sure, very impressive. But, you know, the eras are, like, trying to compare,
yes,
you know, Gretzky's goals to Howe's goals to Maurice Richard's goals. It's not ever the same kind of thing.
Alain Sr. also won 10. There you go. So I'm just looking. But you're right. It's hard. But I'm just saying that's the record, 10. So he could, that's something for him to chase it.
Three races to go.
Yeah.
Only one more road course is where he's done his best, but he has won on ovals this year. These are his first ovals. But the run he's on is just, it's so crazy good. In addition to 8 wins, he's also got 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So, and I think he's only got 2 finishes outside of the top 10 in the whole season. So, you know, he got taken out in an accident and then they had one kind of mediocre race, but it's crazy good. Again, this is kind of, you know, once in a generation. You know, the level of competition in IndyCar is a lot tighter now than it's ever been. Yep. No disrespect to the guys of the past. I think they'll acknowledge that, you know, things are way more competitive now. But, yeah, really, really cool to see. Really cool to, you know, I didn't really appreciate the Jordan era when he was, you know, rewriting the record book. But getting to see, you know, in my favorite sport, getting to see this is has been pretty awesome.
Now, the other news that I find interesting is that earlier this week, Fox Sports acquired 1/3 of Penske Entertainment, which includes buying into IndyCar and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's their first year where they're the broadcaster of IndyCar.
Yep.
So I got to think now that they've actually got, you know, money invested in the specific, not just the broadcast, but kind of partner. I don't know if that's a conflict of interest. Obviously it isn't, because they're going to allow them to do it, but you got to think that they're going to be promoting it way more. Are we going to see IndyCar even bigger next year?
They're up 31% viewership already in their first year. The Indy 500 was up over 40% viewership, and this is just year one. I think it says a couple of things. It says that Fox Sports appreciates that, you know, IndyCar is kind of a diamond in the rough, that there's a lot more room for improvement, especially once you compare what IndyCar is doing to, you know, Formula One, not comparing those two as, you know, technology or what the cars are, but the fact that F1 can draw such big crowds, even in the US, where candidly, the racing in Formula One is very mediocre compared to the racing in IndyCar.
Yes.
Again, this is kind of a strange year, but generally on any given weekend, anyone can win. You know, realistically, if you're a top 10 team, a top 15 team, and you put it together, you can beat the best of the best, which makes it really exciting.
Totally does.
The year started out kind of strange with Palou and Kyle Kirkwood really splitting the wins for like the first 9 races. Like, just kind of a strange year that it works out that way. It also says that what they've seen in a really short amount of time has allowed them to, you know, net a decent return. Again, they're only halfway through, or just over halfway through their first season. So yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting. I talked to a couple of people who are not IndyCar people, and they're, you know, they're really NASCAR people, but they're talking about how strong the marketing has been during Fox's NASCAR broadcast. And it's kind of, swayed them to move over. I'm sure NASCAR is not happy with this move because they want all the attention on them. But it's going to be very interesting to see how the sport changes, how their marketing changes. They talked about how they're really going to go digital heavy with their promotions, and you know, which is really what this generation needs. I mean, they don't really need to be marketing to people like you and me. We need to start marketing to kids, and we need to get kids in go-karts that get into, you know, Skip Barber cars and Formula Fords and Formula 1600s to, you know, kind of replenish that. But we also need people watching at the earlier levels to get them kind of converted into open wheel racers. So hopefully this is going to have a trickle down effect across the entire sport.
Yeah. Well, I think it's huge news for fans of IndyCar and anybody who's an open wheel racing fan. F1 this past weekend, right now, you know, we just talked about the competitiveness in IndyCar, and in F1, it's pretty much McLaren. They're dominating. Really, the only racing is can Norris and Piastri race each other.
Yeah.
Right? It's almost what it is. There is some, you know, later down, and I know that you can try to sell excitement in the middle of the pack, and that's nice, but when you're trying to sell the excitement to see who finishes fifth or sixth over who finishes first or second, to me, that's a little bit of an issue. And, you know, you look at, you know, Lewis had a terrible weekend in qualifying, but in the race, he looked quite good.
He was on fire. He was like the Lewis of old. Almost unthinkable that 7-time champ, 104 race winner, 200 plus podium, you know, truly the greatest F1 has ever seen, could get bounced out of Q1 twice in a weekend. But it happened. Now, yeah. Ferrari's making changes, and what it sounds like happened is, you know, they've got this new rear end, but they've also apparently tried a new brake pad for Lewis. He's raced a particular type of brakes his whole F1 career. Now he's using Brembo brakes, which is what Ferrari uses, and they're just different. In qualifying, he locked up his rear end. He said it's never, ever happened in his entire Formula One career. The thing I say in situations like this, you know, it's really easy because Formula One broadcasts, like a lot of sports broadcasts, are built on drama. They're built on conflict, and they try and create animosity to get people either talking or a little bit more interested. So, you know, the Sky Sports, they're really good at pointing the finger and, you know, oh, has Lewis Hamilton lost his ability to drive? His mind's not in it, blah, 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 blah. These people have, Lewis hasn't forgot how to drive.
Yeah.
He's still as good as he ever was. He just hasn't figured out how to use this new tool or how to get the tool that they have, being this race car, to work for what his style is. And it sounds like they're starting to make the changes. It happens with every race driver. Like Max's style is completely unique to Max. There is nobody else in pretty much all of racing that drives the way that Max Verstappen does. And, you know, between Lewis and Max, they're truly the greatest drivers in Formula One right now. But trying to get the car the way that they need it with what they have in the middle of the season is really tough. Obviously, we get a clean slate next year. But once they got to the race, despite the struggles, you know, qualifying 16th twice in a row, 16th out of 20 cars, he was able to drive through the field because, you know, we've said it so many years on the show that once the rain falls, it can become a bit of an equalizer. It's more about feel than it is about the performance of the car. They happen to get the setup right, which they have to lock in on Saturday during qualifying. They can't really change the setup, the downforce of the car. They have to kind of guess for what the race is going to be like.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun. I didn't really get to see a whole lot of the race. It was kind of on in the background, but hearing about, you know, 2 and 3 car passes on a single lap, like it's great to see that that's still in there. And even though it was only a 7th place finish for Lewis, I know that kind of thing gets you re-fired up, and, you know, it's easy to start self-doubting. It's enough when you hear it from the press, if you, you know, pay attention to that. But once you have a night like that where it's like, okay, I can still do this, it'll keep you going for a while.
Yeah, I would think so. But it is, you know, the race itself, like, wasn't much. But Piastri or Norris? It's a pretty close race. What is it, 16 points separating between the two of them? So who do you like to win that?
My choice is easily Piastri, not because of the lead, but he is way more, at least he presents himself way more emotionally level. He doesn't, like, if you hear him say anything even remotely elevated on the radio, something serious has gone on. He's been cut off. He's been in accidents. He's had, you know, near misses. And he just comes on the radio like, yeah, no big deal. We're going to, you know, shake this off. We're going to go. Last year at this race in Hungary was a lot of team order stuff where they gave preferential treatment to Lando on the pit stop, which they're not supposed to. The driver that's leading the race gets to call the race is the accepted etiquette. They had to get Norris to give up the position because it was rightfully Piastri's, but it took something like 20 or 30 laps. Like, it was a long time. Norris's engineer was on the radio, like, listen, do the right thing. I know you're going to give this spot back. And Norris wasn't saying anything, but Piastri wasn't flipping out on the radio either. Like, a lot of drivers, you know, I'll count myself. I am not a Formula One driver, but I'm an emotional driver that when things, you know, I'll yell on my helmet, like when something bad happens, because I would rather emit and get rid of it than kind of sit there and stew and simmer. Piastri doesn't ever really do that. He just kind of sits back and lets it happen. But he's also not going to make emotional decisions. He's not going to, you know, overreact. He's not going to take a guy out. He's not going to make a low percentage move trying to pass somebody where there isn't room just for that. That I think it's got, the only thing that's working against Piastri is I think the team has put Lando in a slightly better position. It seems like they give him the benefit of the doubt on calls. It seems like they have a bit more preference on his end. That might just be my perception, but it seems like when there's a decision to be made between the two drivers, more times than not, Lando seems to get the benefit.
And you were out at NASCAR. We talked to you from the track at Kalibuki Motorsports. Cameron LaCroix, nothing really happened because LaCroix got the engine problems.
We were looking forward to it. It looked like there was going to be potential.
Like a, it was almost like a disappointment. Like, it's like everybody's, I know it's not a fight, but you know, like a real good battle and then nothing. Because of car problems.
Yeah, before we took the green flag on the, we do two formation laps. And unfortunately, even before we got to the green flag, LaCroix's engine let go. He didn't get to start. So, but they're off to Autodrome Chaudière this weekend, just outside of Valley Junction in Quebec, about 45 minutes outside of Quebec City. There will be a couple of opportunities for those two to bumper to bumper and side to side. So,
like, I wish Cameron after the race would have pulled like a Donovan Bailey. I know it's not very, because it didn't start. He just said, he's chicken. He chickened out just to fuel it up. Like, that would have been unreal.
It would not have worked out to his benefit.
Doesn't matter. I don't care. It would have been awesome. Because honestly, people be like, what? People be watching. Even non-fans would watch that. Just for people like a little bit of drama right now. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's sports drama. It's not like real life. Like, to me, that's just kind of funny.
It'll happen this weekend. Cameron's leading the points. DJ Kennington kind of just running a DJ style year where he's not, you know, he's won a race, but he's not really running up front a lot, but he's also not getting into trouble.
Yeah.
He's only sitting a few points back with quite a few races left to go in NASCAR Canada. If Cameron and LaCroix decide to tussle, it can really do wonders for DJ. Andrew Ranger is always good at Chaudière, loves the high line. And I believe, I can't say with 100% certainty, but if anyone's interested, the race should stream live on Rev TV through YouTube.
Oh, okay. Yep. Awesome. Well, great stuff, Colin, man. We appreciate it. Have yourself a good weekend. Enjoy the long weekend.
And to you, sir.
There you go. That's Colin Livingston in the Racing Report, brought to you by...